Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza, and it's great to be back with you again. I want to say Happy New Year to all of you entrepreneurs out there and wannabe entrepreneurs out there and those who know people who happen to be entrepreneurs, and you're tuning in because you saw the title and you know that you want to get information so that you can pass it along to those that you know are business people or those who are aspiring to go into business for themselves. If you've been following the show, as I always say, for a while, you know that once a month we have a very special guest on discussing entrepreneurship. And I am just I feel very, very fortunate and blessed to have the opportunity once a month and sometimes several times a month to speak with my guest today, because it's not every day that you run into people who have such a passion for what it is that they do and are willing to share that information. And if you have listened to any of the shows with my special guest, who for today, by the way, is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, then you know from listening to these shows that he has a wealth of information. He knows what he's talking about, has a passion for what it is that he does, and that the information that he shares is on point and valid. And so, again, for all of the entrepreneurs out there, I just want to encourage you to definitely go down the archives and listen to all of the shows where you see Professor Geiger's name, Joseph T. Geiger's name. Listen to that show. I guarantee you, you're going to learn a lot because, again, we're talking to someone that has over 50 years' experience as an entrepreneur. He's been doing this before some of us were even born. So you know he has a lot of experience, and I'm just fortunate and blessed again to have him on our show to share that information. He's an author, an awesome author, an author of two books. He's written two books. One is called, the one we'll be discussing tonight, is Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. But that number is growing. that number is growing, so we might have to change the title, Professor, as these principles keep coming to you. He's also written Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. You know, you'll really find this book. We've also doing a series on that, too. You definitely want to, when you go into the archives, find that show, Finding a Career for Life. They're listed part one, part two, and part three, and we're doing a series on that, so you want to listen to those shows as well. But in case you're not familiar with Professor Geiger, I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's currently retired, but Joseph T. Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently resides. And as I mentioned, Professor Geiger is an author of two books, fabulous, fabulous books. And again, I want to encourage you, throughout the course of the show, we'll tell you how you can get these books. And again, for those who are tuning in and listening regularly to the show, I want to definitely encourage you to get the book. Don't just tune in and listen to the show. Get the book. I mean, that way you don't have to wait until the next show for Professor Geiger to come back on and share these principles. And if you know of entrepreneurs, or even if you just have young people in your life who really aren't even sure what they want to do with their life, I'm going to tell you about another book that he has out. Again, that's called Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. Awesome, awesome book. And a lot of young people can benefit from this, not just young people, but, you know, older people as well. So, Professor Geiger, welcome back to the show. Again, it's always a pleasure to have you with me and my guests. Again, Happy New Year to you. And I'm ready to kick off another year with you with powerful, powerful information. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I always learn so much. I always go back and listen to the shows and just get fed. Professor, again, I always like to tell the new listeners, people who are tuning in for the first time, you know, why they're listening to you. You know, what is it about entrepreneurship that I guess got you started? I mean, some people say entrepreneurs are born. Others say, no, not necessarily. You can be taught how to be an entrepreneur. But for you, what was it? Did you just have it in you to do it, do you think? What actually
well,
brought
I,
you to?
What taught my first business, I was at a private school, where, and the reason I was there is because I'm dyslexic, which means that I can't read very well. And my parents realized that if they didn't do something, I was going to be handicapped for life. And they found a school in New England that that helped people that were that way. Most of the students were not, but a few of us were. And so they sent me there. And I was a farm kid, and most of the people at that school were from rather wealthy families. And so my parents had kind of a special deal. First of all, I was from Kansas, and they didn't have anybody from Kansas or in the Midwest, so that they wanted that. But they couldn't, all the other kids had pretty sizable allowances. Well, I didn't. And they had a store, and this was in the 8th through 12th grade. And like all little kids, I mean, this school was out in the middle of nowhere. The closest town was 4 miles away. And so they had this store for this was a boys' school for young boys. And they you know, ice cream and all the stuff that young kids want. But I didn't have any money. So I looked around for how can I make some money, and lots of my peers were talking about they didn't have the New York Times to read, and they wanted to read the funnies and the sports pages and all that. And I thought, well, maybe if I could figure out a way to sell them papers, I could make some money for myself. But I didn't have the money to buy 20 or so papers. So what I did is I talked a bunch of the students into taking out subscriptions, and they for the year, and they paid me in advance. And so that gave me enough money to buy, I think I started with 20 papers, and by the time I had graduated 3 years later, I had 60 or 70 that I was doing, and the worm had changed, because all of a sudden I had cash and the others didn't. But that's what started me, is because I needed an income source, and there wasn't one. And I couldn't go to work for anybody. I couldn't go to work for the school. They wouldn't allow that. So I had to come up with some other way. And I had been raised on a farm, and been I knew about raising wheat and selling it, and raising cattle and milk and eggs. And so I knew about that part, and so it wasn't much of a leap from there to selling newspapers.
You know, I'm sure that looking back over your career and back to those days, and how many different businesses you've had since then, and even teaching, you know, on the college level, never thought back then that first venture into entrepreneurship would lead you to all these many years, like decades later, teaching and then even authoring books on, on entrepreneurship, and even showing even other people with the second book, Finding a Career for Life, how they can actually chart their career and really benefit from the principles in your books and the information, the data that you share in your books. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. And I just want to, again, encourage everybody to make sure that you get a hold of these books. But, Professor, before we actually get into tonight's show, again, we're coming from the book tonight, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. I'm going to call it now 105 Business Principles. Could you talk about just the importance of having, when you're trying to make it in business now, and especially nowadays with the internet and all of the different avenues, can you talk about the importance of having somebody on your team or in your corner, in your circle, that has the wisdom, even if it's a mentor? Because, again, as I look at the shows that we've done and the information that you share and have shared with us over the years, it's like having our own mentor, you know, with the principles that you share and, you know, the importance of having somebody, especially when we're talking about going into business, something as important and detailed and, you know, can be intricate as going into business, starting your own business. If you want to be successful, you're going to have people that you can trust, you know, people whose information that you're going to rely on that is factual. So if you could just talk about the importance of that, having people in your circle, people that are knowledgeable, because some people, unfortunately, listen to the wrong people. And as a result of listening to the wrong people, they get the wrong information. And as a result of getting the wrong information, they fail. So could you talk about the importance then of just having people in your on your team, in your circle, in your corner that can advise you properly?
Well, it's certainly helpful. I really didn't have, for most of my career, I found people much later on, after I had had a number of businesses and made many amateurish errors. And frankly, that's the reason that I wrote Entrepreneurial Success, now 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. The purpose of writing the book was to come up with principles that were actionable. And I got the idea of doing it when I was teaching in college and reading books, the textbooks. And the great failing that I found in the textbooks is that the stuff they talk about, and this is true of most books on business, is not actionable. Let me give you an example. In textbooks, when you get into an area like advertising, if you take a look at a book on marketing, and they talk about advertising and the various forms of advertising, and one of the forms of advertising is a roadside sign. And what you'll see in these textbooks and in other books is stuff like where you want to make the roadside sign eye-catching. You want it to be where people will see it, it really drives their attention to you, and they remember it. Now, how do you execute that? Is there a way to execute what I just said? And the answer is no. There is no way. So when I talk about a roadside sign, I say in my book that you need to follow the rule of seven. And the rule of seven says that the roadside sign can have one picture and no more than seven words. Now, can you execute that? Can you come up with a sign that has a picture and no more than seven words? Well, sure. Of course you can. Can you come up with one that is eye-catching and that gets your attention and gets people to remember what you're doing? I don't know how to do that. Now, I've been at this for many, many years. I have no clue how to do that. But I do know how to write a sign that has no more than seven words and a picture.
Mm-hmm.
That I can do. And what the difference between my book and others out there, and frankly a lot of people, is that the advice they give is not actionable, or it is very specific to one particular industry, one particular type of business. Well, there's all kinds of roadside signs. And the rule of seven says nothing about whether you're a car company or you're selling milk or you're a restaurant or what it is. It works for everybody. in every single business, you come up with a sign that has no more than one picture, because more than one picture gets confusing, and no more than 7 words. And if you want to test me, drive down the highway sometime and start looking at roadside signs and see how many of them you can read that have more than 7 words. And what you'll find, if you're the average person, unless you have a photographic memory, you can't. Because that has been tested over and over again. And even though there's been lots of tests on it, I have never seen a book of any kind other than mine that gives this instructions. And virtually all 105 of my principles are the same way. So if you have a problem when you start a business and you say, well, how do I hire people? Well, there's books written on it. And if you ask yourself, are they actionable, what the advice they give, in most cases you'll have to say no, they're not. And my experience in starting 11 different businesses is that what people want who start businesses and are running businesses, they have a specific problem and they want to find out a way of solving a specific problem. And it needs to be solvable. It needs to be, what do I do that I can put into action that will solve the problem? And that's what my book does.
You know, that's the beauty, I think, of this book, Entrepreneurial Success, is that for a lot of entrepreneurs, they start off with a dream. They start off with this idea, you know, the light bulb goes off in their head, and it's like, ah, I've got this fabulous idea. I'm going to change the world. I've got this invention. I've got this idea for a company. You know, it's going to revolutionize the industry and all of that. And it may well be a great idea, and it may well revolutionize the industry. But you've got to get it somehow from your head into the industry. Mm-hmm. You know. And so Professor talks about even just writing a business plan. You got to get it down. You know, you got to get it out of your head.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what this book is, just full of principles that take the idea out of your head and help you manifest it. So tonight we're going to be going through, we left off actually in Chapter 8. The section is called Growing a Business. It's a long chapter, so we're taking it, breaking it up. And we're on principle number 64. Awesome principle here. Again, I love the titles to your principles too, Professor. So we'll start there with principle number 64. And it says, you can grow yourself into bankruptcy. You know, a lot of people, when they start their businesses, they know their idea is, I want to grow it. I want to grow it. I want to grow my business. I want to grow my business. And that's the title of this particular chapter, Growing a Business. But you can grow yourself into bankruptcy, correct, Professor?
Absolutely. You most certainly can. And the problem is young business and older business, people who have been in business for many, many years, big businesses that have billions of dollars in their sales and that they wash around through the business, make some fundamental mistakes. And it is very, very common. Everybody says, well, I want to grow my business. Well, how do you grow your business? Well, there's a number of ways. You can take the products that you now have, products or services, and offer it to more people instead of in one city, in 5 or 10 or in different areas of the town. You can come up with different products that are similar but nevertheless different. Let's say that you're selling power tools, so you can come up with different kind of hand tools and then bigger tools, table saws and so on. You can do that. There's all kinds of things. But fundamentally, they miss the fundamental point. And the fundamental point is, if you're going to grow your business, the purpose of business is to have a profit. And if you grow your business and it isn't profitable, it's going to bankrupt you. So you need to be able to grow the business, if that's what you want to do, in profitably,
mm-hmm.
which means a plan. So sure, if you have one store and you open another store, you'll sell more products. Let's say they're the same products. You're selling women's ready-to-wear dresses. Well, if you have
mm-hmm.
two stores, you can buy in bigger quantity. You'll probably get a somewhat better deal. And you don't have to have another full set of overhead of people who write the paychecks and keep the books and do the advertising and all of that. You already have one of those, and you don't need two of them. So there's some advantages there. But the fundamental question you should ask yourself is this going to make a profit? Not is it going to make me bigger? Can I buy better? Is it going to make a profit? And if so, how?
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to have that plan. And while we're talking about plans, you mentioned, Juanza, that people have ideas and then they have to put it into a plan. What's a plan? Well, a business plan is two parts. It's a story about what you're going to do. In our example here, we're going to have another store. So you write a story about that store, who, what, when, where, and how. And you answer each of those questions. Has nothing to do with dollars at this point. This is just who, what, when, where, and how. How are you going to do this? And then the second part is a cash flow forecast. So you convert the who, what, when, where, and how into dollars. And you do it monthly. So you can figure out what you're going to do and what's it going to cost. And do you have enough money? Because being bankrupt is not running out of assets. It's running out of cash. And I have a saying here, you're bankrupt if you can't make payroll on Friday. Doesn't make any darn difference how much money you're going to have next Wednesday. But if you can't pay your people this Friday, you are bankrupt, and the good ones are going to leave. So you better know how much money you need and when you're going to need it. You need to know that when you start a business. You need to know that every month when you're running the business, and you certainly need to know it when you expand the business. It is very, very common for people to grow themselves into bankruptcy. They're doing very well in whatever they're doing, and then they say, well, gee, if I was twice as big, fine. Well, what happens is the thing gets away from them, and they spread their good people too thin. And what you'll find is people are what makes profits. People are what makes companies run well. And if you have good people and you say, okay, you're really good, you're helping me do a terrific job here, so now I'm going to put you someplace else. Well, if you have another store and you move that good person to the other store, what were they doing in the current store? That job still needs to be done, and it still needs to be done very well. And very often what happens is people grow themselves into another activity or another store, and they find out that the people who really were making it run are no longer at the original store. And you were thinking, boy, I am so darn smart. Look what I've done. I'm just blooming brilliant. And all of a sudden you find out you're not blooming brilliant. The people you had working for you are the blooming brilliant ones, and you were just kind of along for the ride. And now they're someplace else, and the cash cow is no longer producing cash. So expenses go up, and cash goes down, and you go broke. Every time there is a downturn in the economy, you will find articles in the business section of the paper and on television and so on about this company or that company very often they're very big companies. They're very, very wealthy companies. And what the article will say is that General Motors or whoever it is selling off one of their divisions. And what the article will say, the reason they're selling is because it's not one of their core businesses. I've seen that article written 100 times about 100 different companies. And the next time there's a downturn in the economy, you'll see that same article written again. Well, what are they saying? They're selling a division that is not one of their core businesses. In other words, somebody had the bright idea of buying a business that was doing real well, and what they were doing is they were making airplane engines, but this new business is selling insurance. And they didn't have a clue how to sell insurance, but it was making money, doing well, until such time as there was a downturn, and then all of a sudden they're losing their shirt. So they bought it for $10 million, and they sell it for $1 million. And that story is told hundreds and hundreds of times every time there's a downturn. And basically what they did is they grew themselves into bankruptcy.
Hmm. Well, you know, Professor, let me ask you this, because, you know, just you said something, and it made me think about other shows that you and I have done and conversations that we've had. It's clear that you love business, okay?
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you take an entrepreneur who gets this bright idea, I mean, now, prior to this bright idea that they get, they may never have thought about business at all. They may never have thought about entrepreneurship at all. But, you know, they get this stroke of lightning, and, you know, all of a sudden now they have this great idea for a business, a particular business in a particular industry. Okay, now, but just in this last segment, you just mentioned, you know, reading different articles on different, you know, I guess the market, you know, the trends or companies, and you have a love for business, you know, and it's clear. I mean, you've been an entrepreneur in different industries, okay? So how important is it for the individual, the entrepreneur, to have just a love for business in general? Because if a person just has, you know, a great idea for a business, and they have no desire to know anything about any other aspect of business in terms of trends, you know, the economics, the economy, and how that affects their industry, you know, different laws that may be passed that might affect their industry. You know, how important is it, individual, the entrepreneur, just to love business? Period, you know, because
I don't think it necessarily is, Juwanza. I mean, I think it's helpful perhaps, but in my case, I really love all kinds of business. I find them endlessly fascinating. I love to talk to people who have businesses, but I don't find the I don't know that it is. That is really necessary to be that way. I think it may be helpful, but I don't think it is absolutely necessary to be that way. And it does have perhaps a downside, and that is once you learn how many businesses, opportunities there are, and how to find opportunities, what's going to happen to you is you find all of these darned opportunities. They happen all the time. And there you are, you find all these opportunities, and you think to yourself, gee, here's a new one. I'll go do that. And I'm already doing something. I'm pretty good at it, but I can do something else. And pretty soon, you're scattering yourself around. And I don't think that's good. I think I talked to a guy today who is having trouble with a business, and he has a new opportunity. And he asked me what I thought he should do. And I said, well, my friend, you have a choice. You either fix the one you have and get that to running really, really well so you'll have time for this new one, or you sell it, or you close it. But if you don't do one of those three things, when it comes time to start this new business, what you're going to do is you're going to run yourself into bankruptcy, only instead of having one business in bankruptcy, you're going to end up with two of them. So don't do it until you fix this one. And so I think he's in Texas, and he may come up here, and we have a little conference for a day or so and try to figure something out for him. But you got to be real, real careful about this, because you can absolutely run yourself into bankruptcy.
Got too many irons in the fire.
Well, there's nothing wrong with having more than one iron in the fire, but when you start out a new one, you better be able to really focus on that, because it takes a lot of effort. People see businesses that are running really, really well, and after a guy has been at it or a gal has been at it for years and years, they come in a little late and they may leave a little early and they have vacations and all of that. And it's awful easy to say, boy, this owning business stuff is simple. You don't come in until 9:30 and you can take vacations and you make big money. Boy, this is great. Well, let me tell you, that's not how it started in most cases. Most cases, it started with 80-hour weeks and just nose to the grindstone until you thought your nose was ground off. it can be very, very time – not can be. It is very, very time-consuming. So if you have one that isn't working well – it isn't going to suddenly start working well all by its little self. That's not what's going to happen. So you better figure out how to make it work well before you start launching into something else.
Well, you know what? I think that this kind of leads into principle number 65, which is plan for the party before it starts. I think a lot of times people are looking for the party when they go into business, you know, and they don't see the work, you know. But could you talk about planning for the party before it starts?
Well, that's what this guy needs to do, and that's what we talked about. So before, when I had an airplane business selling small airplanes to General Aviation in California, and I had one location, and one of the things I'd always planned on is having several. And I wanted to have one in the Los Angeles area and one in San Francisco and others. And I didn't plan for each of those long before I ever started. I knew I wanted to do them, but I didn't plan. And what do I mean by planning? Well, if we'll go back to this, you have a ladies' ready-to-wear store, and in one city, and you think that you always want to have another one, and perhaps in another part of the same city or in another city. So you start looking around, and you know, just staying aware of things, and you find a location, and away you go. Well, you didn't plan for the party. Your party is that you're going to have another location. What are some of the things that you're going to have? Well, you're going to have management. You're going to have people in charge of the various portions of your ladies ready-to-wear. You're going to sell undergarments. You're going to sell day dresses. You're going to sell fancy dresses. You're going to sell shoes. You're going to sell all kinds of things. Well, you need to have somebody in charge of that. Are they able to manage it? Well, I don't know. They do a real good job now. Well, that's fine. But what happens when you have another store and so you dilute your people? and you take some of the good people who are doing a great job now running their department, and maybe they're the only ones there. There are two or three people in each department. And so now what are you going to do about management for that department? You just took your good manager, you set them over on the new store to get help to get that going. Do the others have any idea what the hell they're doing? And the answer is no, they don't, because they've never been asked to. So if you think that you're going to have another location, maybe you better start training people beforehand. How do you do that? Well, it's pretty simple. What you do is you take your people now. Let's say you have a department of three. You have one in charge, and there's two under them. And you go to the one in charge, and you say, hey, what I want to do is train somebody else. So if you're sick or when you're on vacation, you got somebody who can instantly come in and back up. How do you do that? And this is what I talk about in my book. It's how do you do that? And if you don't answer the question, how do you do it, the principle isn't worth a hoot.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do it? Well, you go to the other two people and you say, do either one of you guys and gals want to be a manager? And if one of them says, yeah, I'd kind of like to learn how to do that, you say, okay, what we're going to do is put you in charge for a week. And during that week, you're in charge. And the person who is currently in charge becomes a worker bee for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the one who is in charge actually is in charge. They have to make the decisions. They have to keep the inventory. They have to schedule. They have to do all that stuff. And at the end of the week, you say to them, what'd you think? And my experience is that half of them will say, hey, this is great. I want to do this again. And the other half will say, I don't ever want to have that ever. Don't even think about asking me. I want to own my family, and I don't want to worry about this stuff. So now you know you got one who's a possible, and you go to the other one. You want to do that. And so what you end up with is you have this department of three people in it, and hopefully, eventually, all three of them know how to be a manager. You are preparing for your new party. Your new party is your new store. When it comes time to take a new store, then you have three, and you can say, well, do you want to take the top manager and put them in the new store? Probably, because they're going to have the normal run-of-the-mill problems, but they're also going to have new problems. They're the best at it. And then you can take one of the other two and put them in charge, and the other one is a backup, and you hire a newbie.
Mm-hmm.
So you have planned for the party. You're ready for it way in advance before you ever rent the property, before you ever find out where the store is going to be. And you do that throughout your whole store. So when it comes time to start, you're already planned. You have it in the can, and you pull it out, and boom, you're going. If you don't do that, when you start your new store, you're liable to grow yourself into bankruptcy.
Hmm. You know, I love this because this is where the rubber meets the road. This is these principles are principles that people, if you don't have the book, and you're probably hearing this show, if you're hearing this show for the first time, you probably heard that for the first time, you know. And it's just things that people don't think about. It's the everyday things that can occur that often trip people up because they just hadn't thought about it. You know, okay, if I get a new store, who's going to, and I take my manager, who's going to run the old store? You know,
yeah.
It seems like Thomas would have to train somebody, but I think a lot of times people just don't think about it until they're thrust into a situation like that, and then they're forced to think about it. And like you said, they just did not plan for the party.
And when they're forced to think about it at that time, it's very likely too late. Because then what you're faced with is, well, I can take my good person and put it in the new store to build up that department there, and then I'm going to take one of the people that are already in the current store and roll the dice and hope like hell they can do it. And if they don't, it's an oh my God. Well, you're a little late, friend. you should have planned that years before. And that's what it's. That's when you say you're gonna plan for the party, long before it starts. So how much money is it gonna take? You should already have that down. Where am I gonna get the money? You should already have that down. How am I gonna get it? You should have that down. So there's just a myriad of things that you should do, and you should have thought of it a year in advance, so that you can work out the kinks, and when the time comes, you pull out the plan. It is all there, names of who's going to do what, how they're going to do it, when are they going to do it, how are you going to work together. All of that should be all planned out long, long before you go do it, and most people don't.
See, that's why everybody, that's why you need the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road. Okay, because you don't want to wait until, you don't want to wait until and then start scrambling and then trying to figure, oh God, what was the name of that author again? I got to get that book. Get it now.
Well, what a lot of people say, I've had a number of people say, how come you have so many of these? There can't be that many. I mean, I see other books where they say, follow my three principles and get rich. Yeah, right. you know, that's kind of like having three principles and on how you raise children. I don't think so. I mean, you got little kids when they're first born, you got to do something, and when they get to be 2 and 3 and 4, you're doing different things, and by the time they're 8 and 9, you're doing totally different things. When they're teenagers, it's totally different, and there's lots of principles. And what, so mine is different in that the if you have a problem, you can page through the book, find a principle that applies to the problem, and it will be executable. And that's the big difference. You can do it. You can actually execute it. It's none of this flowery, puffy clouds in the sky.
I think what happens with these books, Professor, is people, they touch on what they feel that the buyer of the book wants to hear. You know, they want to hear the pie in the sky. You know, they want to hear, oh, three principles and I can get rich? You know, sounds easy. You know, they don't want to hear, you know what I mean? They don't want to hear the, you got to work, 60-hour work weeks, you know. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear come in early and leave late. You know, they want to hear about retiring on the island. That's what they want to hear. But
yeah,
it takes work.
Joke,
it takes
the joke is that people who start small businesses have 8-to-5 jobs. It starts at 5 in the morning and goes to 8 at night when you bring stuff home. But it's still 8-to-5. It's just backwards. And that's what they find out. And actually, that's not entirely a joke. If you read people who have come from big industries and have started their own businesses, universally, what they say is, I had no idea it was going to be so much work and so high stress. When I was working for AT&T or General Motors or whoever it was, I thought I knew about high stress and long hours. Well, I didn't know nothing about those. I learned about those when I started my own business. And the reason is because when they worked for the big company, they didn't have the checkbook. When you work for a little company, you do have the checkbook, and it's on your account, and you get to watch it go down. And that's where the stress is.
Well, for a moment then, before we move on to the next principle, let's talk about the rewards for a second then, because somebody might say, well, shucks, if it's all that, if I got to come in early, leave late, deal with stress, you know, all this other kind of stuff, you know, what's the payoff? You know, now, you mentioned earlier that profit, if it's not a non-profit, you know, if it's a profit-driven business that you got going there, people might say, well, shoot, if I'm working all this hard, and then on top of that, they say most small businesses fail within the first year, you know, what's my incentive to even jump in this pool? Your answer to that?
Well, there's the high stress, it starts out hopefully you'll get your business up and running, and it will back off some. It'll still be in the background, but it will be some. I think, to me at least, the big thing is to look back and said, I did that. And these people who said, well, you did it, but with a great deal of help from others and so on, that may very well be true. But I can assure you that when John Browning invented a new firearm that had never been done before, he could look at it and say, I did that. And when Edison invented stuff, he could say the same thing. Well, the same thing is true of a small business that you get to build, and you look at it, and there's the same kind of pride there is in raising a child and seeing that child grow to young adulthood and really be good at what they do, have a full life. And you can say, you know, you can see the father and the mother who just brings tears to their eyes when they see how well their youngster is doing, and they squeeze each other's hands and they said, we did that. That's part of it. Part of it is the financial resource, in that you don't have somebody saying, well, you got to come in next week. Now, maybe if you will say that to yourself, that you have to come in next week instead of taking that vacation that you wanted, but at least you say it to yourself, and you have the opportunity to plan ahead. And there is with our current tax system, it is very, very difficult to create real wealth. The retirement wealth in a salaried job or an hourly job. It's just because of the taxes, the progressive tax that we have, it's very difficult to do that. How do people tell everybody to do it? Well, you can do it with real estate. You can buy houses and real estate. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with the job. Now you're in business for yourself. So you're a landowner, and you can build it there. You can invest in the market, and you can do it there. But it is very, very difficult to, unless you hit a job that's paying really, really big money, and there are not a whole lot of those. When you look at, you know, when you, even $100,000 today, if you have a family and a couple of children, you go through $100,000, and there's not a whole lot left. So how you can, if you have your own business, maybe you have an $80,000 salary or a $70,000, but frankly, the business pays for a bunch of your stuff. The business fills your car with gas. It very likely buys your car. It does all kinds of things. Sometimes it pays for vacations, and the way it does that is you take a vacation that is somehow tied to the business, and you're able to let the business pay for it. So, and then at some point, you either pass the business on to your children, or you sell it. And if you sell it, you pay capital gains. So instead of paying 40 or 45%, you pay 15. And so there's all kinds of pluses. In addition to that, recently, there's some statistics out that I found for when I did the book Entrepreneurial Success, or the book Finding a Career for Life. And in that little book, I looked up what are the employment where are the jobs coming from? And there's all kinds of things that tell you where the jobs come from. But one of the things that was very, very interesting is that the jobs that were, let's see if I can find that here in just, I think it will take me just a moment. Okay. The jobs in, I believe it was from 2007 until 2011. There was a net 1.35 million new government jobs. Now, that's not just federal government, that's all government jobs that were created during that period of time. There was a negative 1.25 private sector jobs that were wage and salary. There was 10.9 million entrepreneurial jobs.
Wow.
And the federal government, the IRS, are the ones who came up with these figures. What they call them is proprietors. We would use the words entrepreneurs. But so 99% of all new, absolutely increased in jobs came from being an entrepreneur. So if you want to pick a field that has the most likelihood of there being growing jobs in it, be an entrepreneur. And that's a statistical fact.
Now, were these stats based on the people, the entrepreneurs that actually, I would imagine they had to track it some kind of way, because everybody doesn't get incorporated or, you know, that like that. Somebody might just start their own auto body.
They came from tax returns.
Okay.
So if you turned in a tax return and you said that you made $50,000, you and your wife made $50,000 from your job working for the Ajax Construction Company, and mm-hmm. then there was another $40,000 for your online job where your wife was selling widgets online, mm-hmm. that would be an entrepreneur. So that
okay.
would be you. Then she would be a proprietor, and if you had a joint tax return, it would show that the two of you were a proprietor for part of your income. Now, it could be that it became all your income. 2 years later, maybe mm-hmm. she was making $90,000 and you were still making $50,000, and she said, "Hey there, hubby, I could use some help here, and instead of making $90,000, we can make $190,000, but I need some mm-hmm. help." So
right.
You stop being a construction worker and help her, and she's the chief because she knows what you're doing, and you're the hey boy that says, "Yes, ma'am, I'll do it right now."
How do you want it?
Yeah.
Mhm. Well, you know what, Professor? We've got a few minutes left, and we still got more principles to go, but I don't want to rush through them, you know. So I want to let the listeners know about your other book. Again, you've written two fabulous books. The other book, you touched on it, Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. Could you talk about that book briefly? We're actually still in the series on this book, okay, everybody? So
yeah.
You can scroll on the archives. I think we've done three segments on this with more to come. Scroll down the archives, and you'll see Finding a Career for Life. Could you talk about this book and
yeah,
why you wrote
this
book? Yeah,
it was the impetus for doing it. I kept hearing primarily politicians, but also academics saying that telling young people that if you get a degree and a diploma, that's what it takes to earn a really good income. And that's patently not true. Degrees and diplomas don't earn a living. You do. And so I started to do some research because I knew what they were telling me was not true. Mm-hmm. There are just so many young people who are coming out of college, and you hear it. I heard it all the time anecdotally, and you hear it in the news all the time. Young people come out of college and they have debt. I think the average now, according to the feds, it is all administered now by the federal the feds, all student loans now go through the Fed. So the average, I think, is for graduating kids is something like 45,000. And what they're finding over and over and over again is there's all kinds of people who don't have really good jobs. And what one of the studies that was done by CNN Money Report, and they called it the reality of college graduates. 6 months after graduation in 2011 and 2012, 41% of college graduates were working at jobs that did not require a degree of any kind, while another 11% were simply unemployed. In other words, 51% had wasted at least 4 years of their lives, God knows how much money, and were deeply in debt. And they had jobs that they could have easily gotten with a high school education. That's sad.
That is
absolutely sad. And I can put money on it that those people who were found themselves in that shape had no idea that that was even a remote possibility, much less a statistical likelihood, when they went off to college. And they did it because they were told that that's what it took to make sure they had a good job. And here now they have all this education, all this damn debt, and they can't find a job. Why? And in most cases...
And then even when you throw in, too, that for these people, even though they might not be working in the field that they went to college for, and even if they are, then in many cases, if they haven't risen to the point, you know, where they are, let's say, for example, you mentioned psychology, I believe it was in the book, that if you're not a doctor, then you're in trouble, you know.
Yeah, if you're not a PhD, there are no jobs.
Okay.
And that is true of a whole bunch of others. And the book is written, I don't take a position on anything. I don't take a position that you ought to get a degree in petroleum engineering because they get paid more than anybody else. I don't say that. I say that petroleum engineers do get paid more than anybody else, but I don't say that you ought to do that. I say you ought to do what you want to do. But if what you want to do is be a social worker, for goodness sake, please understand that your chances of making much more than $20,000 or $30,000 is poor. And frankly, the average high schooler graduate with 12th grade education, the average is a $30,000 income mid-career. That's the average. And the average person who gets a four-year degree in child care, not medical now, but or psychology, is something like $25,000. So they have 4 years worth of education, God knows how much debt, and they don't make as much as their high schoolers, their friends who just went to high school. So what are your options? And I go through all the options from high school, just out of high school, or to go to a trade school, to get a two-year degree, a four-year, six-year, eight-year degree, each of those in various fields. What are the options? So that somebody doesn't say the one of the guys who wrote on the back of my entrepreneurship book, Jim Douglas, he has a niece, and she got a degree in psychology. Art, some kind of art thing, performing arts. And she couldn't find a job. So she went back and got a degree in psychology, and she couldn't find a job. So she went back again and got a master's in psychology. Guess what? She can't find
a job.
I could have told her that before she started. The statistics are out there. They're easy to find. They're everywhere. All you got to do is look and not listen to the blankety-blank professors that tell you that if you get a degree in performing arts or psychology, there's lots of employment out there. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently turned down in that book, Finding a Career for Life, is in a number of colleges and the bookstores around. I was recently turned down by a liberal arts school, said, we can't have that here. And I said, why not? And he said, well, you tell them that getting a degree in liberal arts is bad. And I said, I won't tell them anything. The federal government tells them that. You tell them that. All I'm using is the statistics that you send in. And they said, well, you put our school in your book, and you said that that the students don't do very well. And I said, I didn't say that, sir. You said it. Those are the statistics that you sent to the federal government, to the Department of Education, so they would pay you for your school, for all the stuff that the feds pay for the school. They required you to send that information in. That's what you told them. That's not what I told them. So
right.
Don't lay that on
right.
me. Well, we can't have that in our... In other words, you don't want to tell your students the bloody truth. And they wouldn't answer that question, but that's the truth. They did not want to tell their students the truth. And it absolutely infuriates me.
You know what? That's why they say information is power. And when you get statistics, one of your principles is all decisions should be data-driven.
Absolutely.
Facts don't lie.
Nope.
You know, the facts are the facts. You know, and just because
right.
a person ignores the facts doesn't make them disappear. They're still going to be facts, okay?
They're still
there. Walk outside in the rain and deny that it's raining, but you're still going to get
yeah.
wet, okay?
That's
so,
right.
You know, Professor,
you don't want
I can
it to
really...
rain today, so you're not going to get wet. Well, actually, you are going to get wet.
You know, that's why information like this is so powerful. And again, I encourage everybody to get the book. Professor, how can they get these books? Again, I know just from people hearing just the last segment on just when you were just sharing about finding a career for life, I know people want to get that. The show on entrepreneurial success, now 105 business principles. The principles keep growing. Professor's
yep.
going strong. How can they get your books?
Well, you can get it at either one of them at Amazon, or you can, if you want a signed copy, it costs the same to get it from me, and you go to theroadtothetop.com, and you can get either one of them there.
Well, Professor, if you like, again, I want to keep this conversation going. Again, you just added three new principles to the already loaded book, Entrepreneurial Success. It was 102 business principles. You just added three new principles on financing a business. I'd like to bring you back this week, if possible, and have you come back on maybe Thursday and share about financing a business. So for
yeah,
the listeners out there, okay, we'll get classes back in session on Thursday. What's today? The 24th, so that'll be Thursday, January the 27th from 7 to 8 p.m. Be here, okay? And by all means, get the book, okay? You want to get the book. One more time, Professor, theroadtothetop.com. They can get both books there with Entrepreneurial Success. They can also get a cash flow forecast, correct?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of two great books. One just keeps growing and growing and growing, this Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, now 105 business principles, and again, Finding a Career for Life, The Road to the Top. Okay, you know how to get those now. If it's not for you, it's for somebody you know, or if you wouldn't have tuned into the show. Share the links with everybody that you know that in business. Professor, any parting words for our listeners today?
Well, see you in a couple of days. Buy the book.
Awesome. Everybody, Thursday it is. We got a date with Professor. Class starts at 7. Make sure you're here. Professor, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for all of the work that you do, all of the information that you share, because it's powerful, man. It's powerful. And so I encourage everybody to share this information. Thanks so much, Professor. I'll be talking to you on Thursday.
Good enough. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Take care. Everybody, that's Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of two fabulous books. One is Finding a Career for Life. We are in the midst of a series on that book, so you can scroll down the archives and you can find the shows on Finding a Career for Life. That was, we did part three, I believe it was the last one, so we'll be doing part four coming up. Also, Entrepreneurial Success, the book that we discussed tonight, The Road to the Top. This book just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It started off as 101 business principles. It is now up to 105 business principles. If you are serious about starting your own business, then you need a guide. You need somebody that's done it, or shall I say, it's very, very helpful to have somebody who has done it to walk you through the process. There are going to be some things that come up that you never thought would come up, just things that you never thought about, okay? This book has 105 business principles that can help you. Most small businesses fail within the first year, I'd say partly because lack of planning. Some things you're just not going to know are going to happen, okay? There are just some things that happen just out of the blue that you just cannot foresee. Okay, but it's like insurance. If you're prepared for the flood, if you've got flood insurance doesn't stop the flood, but it sure enough helps you recover from that flood, as opposed to the business next door that did not have flood insurance, and now they're devastated. Okay, this book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, is your business insurance. It's not going to stop things from coming your way. Things happen. But you'll definitely be able to recover a lot quicker and in many cases prevent some of the things that befall many business owners, especially those just starting out. You need a plan. You need a guide. Get this book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. That's if you're serious, okay? If you've got an idea and you've got a dream and you've been sitting on it and you've been, you know, all of your friends know about your dream because you talk about it all the time. They know. Now it's time for you to show it. It's time for you to do it. And you can do it. You can do it. Other people have. But the successful people, they plan. There's a way to do everything. There's a right way. Actually, there's several ways. You can do it the right way, or you can do it the wrong way. It would be wise to listen to somebody who's been an entrepreneur for over 50 years. If I was an aspiring entrepreneur and I knew somebody who was an entrepreneur for longer than I've been born, successfully, and had written a book outlining over 100 principles that span across various industries, not just focusing on one industry, but principles that can be applied to whatever industry you find yourself in. A wise man would listen to a wise man. As you can tell from this show, Professor Geiger, a wise man. So get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. That's if you're serious. My name is Jawanza. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Again, scroll down the archives. This falls under our wealth segment, okay? Now, we've got a spiritual segment, and we've also got a health segment, okay? Scroll down the archives. We've got shows on spirituality. We've got shows on your health. Because none of this stuff is going to matter if you can't get up and go to work, right? If you're sick, and you can't get up and go to work, okay, then an entrepreneurial book is not going to help you if you're sick, right? So definitely check out the health shows. Got shows with people that have cured themselves of cancer, you know, got shows on how to get rid of diabetes, arthritis, high blood pressure, erectile dysfunction, different types of cancers. I mean, you name it in our archives. We got shows on meditation, okay, shows on fasting, okay, shows with Shechem Meshechem Raun Nephi Amen on spirituality, the 11 laws of God with Orwahehi Meturan Kamen. I mean, just scroll down the archives. There's definitely something there for you. My name is Juwanza. Thank you so much for your time. Who am I? I am the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Peace.